Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, Dr. Drew here, and this is just a reminder that the discussions here are not a substitute for medical care or medical evaluation. This is purely for entertainment and education. We hope you learn something, but see your doctor, get proper medical care.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Flores
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Bob, you can gather us around.
And we're going to gather around again, ladies and gentlemen, around the iPhone 7S. That's what I have.
With
and
our friend
listen
Jay
to another episode.
More. You got the iPhone 7.
I got the iPhone 7 here. I got a problem
rectangular.
On this one. I got a problem. The brightness keeps dimming back down. Nate, the man behind the board, is a tech wizard. How do I get the iPhone 7S to not do that?
You know
I
what
don't
it is? You know why that's
dim.
Happening?
It's why?
Because your display thing keeps popping up and you probably hit it or something, right? Wouldn't that be that? Or maybe it's connected to the volume thing. Somehow you've connected
oh,
it there.
Oh, is it connected to the volume thing?
Why does
why is technology so hard, Jay?
Because we're Luddites and we're you know, Peter Gabriel digging in the dirt type of guys. To find the places I got hurt.
Climbing up on Salisbury Hill.
Or that song also.
I love that song.
So before the mics heated up, we were kind of tilting towards loneliness. Is that what we were getting into?
No,
you were complaining a little bit about
real.
I don't think I complained since I've been here.
Not complaining.
You guys were in a about the left and the right, just pulling you in all directions.
Yes,
it's like, how about you grow a fucking spine and
you
go do your job?
Here's
but the left
say,
and the right, they're
no,
pulling on me.
No, but people say, how is it that you and Drew are so connected? He's coming from the right. Towards the center over the last 20 years. I'm coming from the left towards the center, and we feel like we're the only two people in the center.
You're not, because I'm in the center looking at both of you on either side of me. And if you think you're meeting somebody from the right in the center, they got you where they want you because they keep moving further to the right.
That's true.
And then when you meet them in the center, it's like where Reagan was.
Yeah.
That's you now. It's like Reagan.
No,
I'm
like
Reagan. Because the left stays where the left is. The right keeps – and I wouldn't legitimize either party with my affiliation, period.
Yeah.
Sorry. You're voting for a necktie. You know what party I like? Block party. What's up? Let's watch our parents get day drunk and ghost ride our bikes down the street.
Yeah.
So the right goes farther right, like whether it's a Ralph Reed or it's a this or it's a Trump, and then the left goes to the middle, which is now where the right just was. And the right keeps drifting further right, and the left keeps following
Let
them.
Let me argue for Drew. Let me be Drew for a second.
Sure.
Those ideas are correct in economics, in foreign policy, in military action, but not in this crazy transgender bathroom stuff. So the left is going left on a certain thing. But you're right. In the basic things that government talk about, economics, security – Democrats over the last 30, 40 years have become more conservative, definitely. The line has moved. But transgender bathrooms, really? You know what I said when that was a big issue? I'm from L.A. We don't allow anyone to go to public restrooms, so it won't matter either way.
Yeah, that's why we go to Barnes & Noble. Just take a shit.
We don't have bathrooms.
I'm not going to buy books. I want to take a dump at Starbucks. Let me in. But here's the thing about
one
transgender.
One bathroom for 40 people that just had double espressos.
locked bathroom with a code.
What's the password? Yeah. If it's over four digits, I got to write it down.
Yeah.
But the thing about transgender bathrooms, again, like it's a carnival game and it's tilted our way. People with hearts and souls that pause, it's tilted towards inclusion. You can't, historically, it's been proven out. Like blacks weren't allowed to play baseball. It was a great, like people think like steroids was the biggest like crazy cover up in the history of baseball. Like, no, blacks were not allowed to play. for centuries. Like, that's way bigger. And now it's – nobody even thinks about it, you know, until somebody, like, yells a racial slur from, like, the bleachers at Fenway, like, hey, how are ya? Mookie! What are you, little lost Mookie? Like, my name's not Mookie. My name's Carl. It's like, oh, he's being racist. But, like, with transgender bathrooms, it's like, well, I'm not going to have – like, the photos, it's all, like, meme. It's bullshit. It's a flash in the pan. It's meme-based.
Where did
it's,
it go? Where did the activism for transgender bathrooms go? Remember how heated it was last year? Where did it go?
You wouldn't
did
know.
Did it get solved? Did it get solved, Drew?
I don't think so.
Well, because that's what I'm saying. You're proving my point. It's a flash in the pan. And when you send me a meme of a biker with a giant cock wedged into, like, My Little Pony underpants, that's not who a transgender person is. You don't know. Like, Tilda Swinton is, like,
Drew
the
didn't
closest
see that
you'll
picture.
Get. Like,
Drew didn't see that picture. That was at Coachella, I believe, that picture that went around the internet.
Tilda Swinton.
Like, that's as close as you'll see, like David Bowie, Tilda Swinton. Like, that's as close you go, like, maybe that's a transgender. You wouldn't know they were transgender walking into... You know, the ladies.
There's not somebody at
the
bathroom.
Because they look like a lady. That's why they're transgender, because their entire lives, their body has said, this isn't right. This isn't you. You're a woman. So they've done everything to look and act and behave like a woman.
Sure.
It's not some guy with his crank out like, hey, I'm a chick. Like, that guy's getting bounced. It's like hockey. It'll police itself.
Okay.
323-649-8268. Please, Facebook folk, give us a call. 323-649-8268. Nate, if you can pick up that.
You just gave out my phone number on your show.
Yeah, that,
you just gave out my number.
Cell phone number. That was his cell phone number. Drew, you got
what
the
you
numbers.
You literally just gave out my
Cheryl.
Phone number.
Cheryl's on the air. Cheryl's calling you, Jay. More stories, of course. Hashtag more stories. Hi, Cheryl.
What's the story?
Hi.
Morning glory.
Yeah.
So I'm a 49-year-old woman who relocated out here to California to get sober. If I make it to the 26th, I'll have 22 months.
Right on.
Well done.
And sober. Thank you. I work in the industry. I left behind my only child to come out and do this in Oklahoma, and he's still there. I had to leave my family. And when I came out here, the intentions of being out here 45 to 90 days, and returning home. And I knew for me and my sobriety, returning home was not an option because it would be a waste of time. What I've discovered in my sobriety and with my giving back to newcomers and to new sponsees is how the problem I've had is trying to explain to them that being selfish is okay, because there's such a negative stamina with that word, selfish, with my own people. I'm Native American, by the way. I'm straight off the Osage Reservation, born and raised. Mm-hmm. So I'm a minority within a minority within a minority.
Wrapped in a riddle.
We're taught to.
They
you
say
got
that,
it.
Like, they say that on Dateline. An enigma wrapped in a riddle.
And one of the things that we're taught is humility, how to be humble. And so having to explain to other Native Americans outside of my own people, you know, wanting to be sober, needing to be sober, having to get sober, and explaining to them it's okay to be selfish and to do what you have to do.
But it depends what you mean by selfish.
She's talking about her kid, obviously.
Yeah.
Are you getting criticized?
I'm getting a giant whammy here that I think I can clear a lot of the snow from the street here intuitively.
Go ahead.
And that is.
Well, what I mean is.
Go ahead.
It's hard for me to explain. I'm sorry. It's hard for me to explain to all people. You know, it's okay to be selfish.
Okay, we heard you.
We get that.
Heard
but
you.
Are you,
if
are
you're
you,
40, would you say you're 49?
Yeah.
So your child's
how
past
old's your
20,
kid?
Right?
My child is 17. He was 15 when I came out here.
Okay. So the selfishness you're talking about is your feelings of guilt about leaving an unhealthy life behind in, was it Oklahoma?
It literally is the same guilt you should feel if you had to have a surgery and had it done to save your life. Why would you wouldn't feel guilty if you did that? Why do you feel guilty if you saved
it's
your life?
It's the relocation and leaving the kid behind.
Yeah,
in
but
Oklahoma.
But what if she had to go to selfish?
That's getting well.
Yeah,
and
that's not do with selfishness.
Your guilt about leaving your child behind, and I think you need to let yourself off the hook for that. Cheryl.
Yeah, agreed.
And you said hold on one second. You said if you go back, it would be a waste of time. And that's incorrect, and you know that's incorrect. If you went back, you would be unhealthy immediately, and you'd be very sick immediately. That's why you can't go back.
You got it.
And people don't understand
but
that.
My question was this. I accepted my reasonings and why I had to do this for me.
That's not selfish. That is not selfish. That is everything but selfish.
Exactly.
But it's, yeah, but I can see how you. So you're getting labeled as. Are you getting labeled as selfish by fellow members?
No, by yourself or by yourself. No, just by yourself.
Her son seems to be working a little bit too.
Who's calling you selfish? Your son?
Oh, I've had. No, not my son. My son understands. He's an only child, but that kid is amazing. He does understand. He wants me home. Don't get me wrong. In fact, I'm flying home in December for like 3 days. This will be the first time since I set foot off that plane at LAX, January 26, 2016, that I will have returned home. But it's actually, I think my question's been misunderstood.
I don't think you asked one.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'm having a hard time explaining to newcomers and to potential sponsees and new sponsees the definition of selfishness without it having a negative stamina. And I know I've had my own people reach out to me about my sobriety, my story, what I have to do, what I had to do, and trying to tell them.
Well, let me explain one thing. Do not be concerned with what newcomers think of your narrative and your sobriety.
Secondly, let's remove the word selfish entirely. Nobody comes in. You're introducing the word selfish
don't use
to the
that
newcomers.
Word. Don't use that word. You're acting out your own guilt by using that word.
Exactly.
Stop using that word.
You're getting well.
And talking positive.
Can your son come here, Cheryl?
He actually did. And when he was out here for 3.5 weeks, and when we got to the house, he said, I hate it. It's too loud. It's too noisy. It's too big. I said, son, it's midnight. It's nighttime. And he goes, I hate it. I'm used to the quiet. I'm used to the country. You know, you're talking about taking the country mouth and putting it in the city, and that was him. You know, so relocating out here and living out here is just not healthy and conducive for him. It's different.
It is if it ties to your well-being, you know, and it's, you know, I think Drew would agree with me. I think that trip home, you might want to push that back to March.
Yeah, at least. And you must start going to Al-Anon. You said you were in the industry, 2 years sober, working in the field. That is dangerous. Go to Al-Anon. A lot of this confusion about their guilt and your straighten that all out in some Al-Anon program. You must go to Al-Anon. You can't. Nobody can work in the industry that is in recovery. Bob, what am I going to say?
5 years. But
5 years.
I lowered it to three because I couldn't find it.
Hold on. But what else did I say?
Can we just clarify?
I had it five years. I know. But what do I say about if you're going to work in the field? I don't care if it's three or five. You got to go to Al-Anon or have a therapist. You have to.
Which field? Show business?
Addiction.
No, ours are working in rehab.
Addiction.
Oh. Right? So the initially.
I thought she was like in show business.
No, she's in the recovery industry, right?
Yeah.
The new industry, Jay, is recovery industry.
Yeah. I thought it was agents for abduction victims.
Which reminds me. Hold on. I've got to remind everybody this week that. Let's see.
Tonight.
Help me with this. Yeah. When is this?
Tonight, AETV.com. Watch Monday. Dr. Drew interview Elizabeth Smart, who is abducted for...
No, I think it's just a documentary about her. Next week, he interviews
her.
No,
it's this week. Monday, November 20th. Yes.
We can't get it straight.
AETV.com. It airs tonight.
Yes. You're on the show, Drew, and we don't know when.
It's tonight.
No, I said it three times, and everybody corrected me incorrectly.
Jay's always right.
All right.
That's not true at all, actually.
Susan said that...
Which is really important to me.
It is confusing. I know. Okay, so Facebook listeners right now, this is the podcast that's going to air next Monday.
Okay.
So Drew has an announcement for the podcast listeners.
Oh, right. Right.
So we're in a liminal space and
so
time.
So Jay was right, and... I was right. We were both right, Norton.
It's airing tonight on A&E at 10 p.m. Also, check your local listings, depending on time zone. Elizabeth Smart, Questions Answered, it's called. And the documentary started the whole conversation, repeating also tonight, 8 and 11, before and after our special. Again, it's all on A&E. Catch full episodes, also available on the A&E website, aetv.com.
Thank God you got that interview, by the way.
as opposed to
like Chris Hansen. Elizabeth Smart, I want to ask you about sex. Like the one word he can't say. He's in charge of To Catch a Predator. He goes, it seems like you came here for sex. Like he has a stroke every time he has to say the word sex. He goes, did you bring your wine coolers?
Yes.
Did you bring your condoms? When I read your emails, I'm going to put it in your blank. That reads to me like you drove from Tallahassee to Berea, Ohio for sex. It seems like you wanted sex. Sex.
Thank God he didn't like cover an assassination. Like
the president has been shot.
He says sex like Foster Brooks.
Yeah. Sex. Seems like I'm Chris Hansen. And my head's getting larger due to alcohol poisoning.
Is he the guy that makes you behave poorly in a restaurant and then you see if people will intervene? Who's that guy?
I don't know.
Because that guy's a weird moralist, too.
What would you do?
You seen that show?
Yeah, I don't. They make me uncomfortable. I always wanted to be on Punk'd because I'm like, nobody ever just punched this kid and cracked this fucking orbital socket into his head. Like, hey, your truck with your kid in it didn't roll into the lake. Oh! like they're going to cover it with cameras, 16 different angles. Nobody ever just dropped him when he came out to go, surprise.
We got Steve from Atlanta. Steve. Hey, Steve.
I love this guy.
This is the greatest.
Hey, you live.
You live, buddy. What's happening?
How you doing?
Not much. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a question for you, but first I just wanted to say a big thank you to Bob. Bob, you made a huge impact in my life. I've been in recovery, a little under 15 years, and the program's changed my life. It's changed my dad's life. Mom's been in Al-Anon for a long time.
Wow. Helped
her too. And, I really, I get it. When Bob talks, I really get it. It comes straight from the heart.
Thanks.
It means a lot to me.
Thank you.
Right, cool. Don't give a big head now,
You ever been to meetings in Atlanta?
Yeah.
No,
I never really went
to Atlanta.
What is
you
got to
stroke Jay Moore a little better. We're gonna lose him the rest of the night.
No,
the
part, stop
of,
that.
The part
go,
of it.
Go the, to the triangle.
What's the part the like? I always call it the Melrose part of Atlanta, and there's meetings out there in that area. What like it's got a name like the Fan District or something. Anyways, I go to Atlanta.
Decatur. The
in SWAT. Like 20 years ago, so I had like 2 years sobriety. And we go there, and they're burning sage, and they come around with a feather over you. And I just said, am I in fucking Malibu? Where am I right now?
Malibu.
And I realized.
Yeah.
You know the meeting I'm talking about.
That's the meditation meeting. Yeah, that's the Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 5:45 meditation meeting.
Yeah.
It's awesome. They have a big.
Feathers and.
I forget what the name of it is.
Yeah, and it's.
Yeah, it's
and
they light it.
Sounds more like burlesque,
So what I part felt of town right at home in Atlanta.
Wow, great.
Yeah. What part of town is that?
What is that part of town called?
Buckhead, it's off Beamon Road.
Yeah.
You know the bridge that burnt down? Okay, it's right next to that.
When did the bridge burn down?
We had a guy that burned a bridge down I-85.
Yeah, a guy? Just one guy burned the bridge down a bridge?
When did it burn down?
Yeah, he got mad and set fire to a chair.
Don't they just fix it? Wouldn't they just fix it?
I could ask like a third time.
It took him... Right. 5-6 weeks, but the I-85 was shut down for 5 or 6 weeks. Oh yeah, it was a mess.
Hey, is that road going up to Athens yet? Did they finish that
Who
road?
Who gives a shit? Hi, Chris. What's your question? You're on the air.
Yeah, Steve. What's up?
Good God! You guys are done blowing each other. Maybe we can have a conversation.
You guys were talking about social media. You've had quite a few discussions about social media, and I don't know if you've ever heard of somebody named Ray Kurzweil.
Oh sure.
I met him about 7 years ago. Yeah, he's he's an inventor. He's had amazing, ability to forecast just about everything in technology. He had an article with Fortune magazine a couple months ago. He said that the power and influence of governments is decreasing because of the tremendous power of social networks and economic trends. He said that social networks.
To me,
causing the power and influence.
No, that to me, that's the same thing as saying
newspapers.
It's 1790, and somebody says, the mob in the street is diminishing the power of the government. Like, yes, the court mobs always do that, right? That's why cities in Europe are set up around these tiny little small squares. They didn't want to create large spaces for people to congregate
because
the cities in Western Europe or even Eastern Europe. are built around tiny city squares, when they used to have big open spaces, people would congregate and form mobs. So they started eliminating those big spaces.
Wow.
We've created the ultimate gigantic space with social media.
The Valley.
The Valley.
The biggest open space.
But
how about the diversity of the Valley, from Pacoima to Sherman Oaks and all parts in between?
Oh, remember? I don't want to think about the Valley right now.
No,
but,
thank you.
But it's true that social media is mobs more powerful.
Mobs
it's
diminish more governments.
But it's also – yes. I'll say this to Chris's point.
Is that a bad thing?
Steve, yes. Mobs?
No, not mobs. The social media
social
giving power over to populism. Is that a bad thing?
To the because mob.
It gives a voice to those people that you're arguing with that you should not be arguing with, Bob.
I'm trying not to argue. I just – it's hard not to sometimes.
Who are you telling?
you were angry for 19 years. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but I don't argue. You don't see me arguing. Really.
I noticed that.
If you argue as an adult, you're a fool.
There's a peacefulness about you. Well,
somebody hasn't said that about me in a long time. I'll take it. I accept.
You do?
If you say how you feel, nobody can argue with how you feel. But I was in a marriage for 10 years where that was proven incorrect.
Well, you're
like, I feel like this. It's like, no, that's not what I said, but like, true. But I feel like this.
Yeah.
That's how I feel right now. Let's talk about this. You know.
And it was a complete surprise? Do you want to talk about it a little bit?
Sure. It wasn't a surprise at all. It's a watercolor on a wall getting too much light, and you see it fading and fading and fading. It's like, you know, if we just move this a little over, it won't get light and it won't fade. It's like, what are you talking about? It was.
Did you go to marriage counseling?
Can't go alone.
Oh, so there was no partnership in that. I went to marriage counseling, and I soon realized after about 6 months that he's really just telling us how to divorce. It's very subtle how they do it, Drew.
Well, for you guys, that's what he's telling you guys, because he saw the writing on the wall. I'm being serious.
Yeah,
like, he probably saw, like, you know, I could, you know, take these guys' money for the rest of my life, or I could just show them
the
exit.
But isn't that a weird call? Like, you get to know the couple for about, what would you say, 3-4 months, and you start to see patterns in their communication. Then finally, at a certain point, the therapist just goes, this is not fixable, and I'm going to help them.
No, but
I'm going to help them. And he brought it up, too.
But I guarantee both of you guys said something to the therapist, like, I don't even want to be married, like, or this is not fixable. Like, you have to say it. He's not going to, you know, first do no harm. He can't just put that in your heads.
He brought it up. He said, you know, it just seems like there's these different, you know, he did say one time, I don't know how you two got married. That's a bad sign in marriage counseling school.
Yeah. Here's the best analogy I had for my personal marriage was, it's like being on the Empire State Building and you're in the elevator and you hit every single button for every floor and you hit two and ding, you get out of the elevator and go, look back and go, will you come out and talk to me real quick about what happened in the lobby? And it's nothing happened in the lobby. Like you become gaslit. Like, what are you talking about? Then you get back in the elevator, third floor, and then you're on the 90th floor. You go, all right, so we knocked over a table at 71. There's no. Because when we get to the top, I'm jumping off. Like, it's a divorce up top. Like, I'm leaving the building when we get to the top. So 118, like, do you want to talk? What happened? Like, get back in the elevator. You're embarrassing me. And then you get to the top, you jump off, and the moment before you hit the concrete, they go, let's go to counseling.
Oh.
And you're like, no, I will not. And I'm profoundly offended at the suggestion. Before my brain spills all over 32nd Street.
So late.
So you didn't. So, Drew, what's your take on marriage counseling? You've never really talked about it.
I think couples counseling is great. But there is a significant majority that are doing what you were worked on.
How do you feel about cuckold porn?
No. Not good.
What?
Not good.
How did that occur?
It's another form of counseling, isn't it?
I guess it works for some people.
Is that a therapeutic bond?
I guess. If for some, obviously. It's a pretty big niche. Why don't we go down to the bar and find a bull?
But a majority of who show up need to end.
You believe that?
That's factually true. Statistically true.
He's agreeing with your Empire State Building.
You don't go on the car lot unless you want to buy a car. You don't go to marriage counseling unless it's broken.
But let's
to the
talk
point
about
where
this,
you're going in a car together to somebody to referee and look at both of your scorecards, which you shouldn't have in the first place.
We've been talking a lot about the 12-step world. So I was told in the 12-step world when I turned there for guidance that sometimes people grow and they're out ahead. You're ahead of them and you have to wait for them to come up to you. You heard this analogy.
That's what you were thinking in treatment. That's what you were thinking about your relationship?
No, people in AA told me how – I went to some people who had successful marriages. Yeah. And I said, hey, how do you – what do you do? And gave give me some ideas of what I should do here. And they gave two of them – they didn't even really know each other – gave the same analogy of, well, sometimes you get ahead in life emotionally or whatever or – And you have to wait for your partner to catch up, that this is constant ongoing journey together, right? So then I just felt like we're on a journey and we're not in the same space, right?
I think you've whitewashed this a bit. I don't feel like you were that accepting in the real time. In the moment, you're probably like, we're on this
journey.
As long as I'm the one ahead. Right. Like, I'm going ahead, and you're just mired in this shit that you want to keep bringing up. I think you probably had a different point of view of it back then.
Yeah, I definitely had a different point of view of it.
My friend asked me once, he goes, if you keep going the way you're going, and you get fuck all in return, I go, let me interrupt you right there. If I got fuck all in return, it'd be like going from freshman year to senior year. If I get zero in return, I'd be thrilled. But it was negative results. It was very harmful.
So you were getting, your soul was being undermined.
The therapist told me I was in an abusive marriage,
yeah.
And then another therapist brought it up separately, and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
This is what we call in my business prolonged suffering.
Prolonged suffering is good for comedy.
No, it's not, because you can't get out of bed to go to the show.
Oh, well, that's there's too that's much beyond, pain. That's beyond prolonged suffering.
Yeah.
But along the way,
did you bring that up to her?
There's nothing I didn't bring up. People say,
What did she say when you said you're two professionals say this is – abusive with
oh no we
suffering.
Were done at that point . And then I was sort of explaining what happened but not speaking poorly of the other person because it's not fair, they're not there to defend themselves, but I mean physically, like, it was taxing, like impotence.
How long did it drag on for?
People on the outside looking in go, no, you were always just running around a bit, but I would say like 3 years it was. There's only one conceivable exit, and people that on the Art of Charm podcast did this lady on, I think her name was Linda Carroll, and she talked about the narcissist continuum, where you can always tell the enabler in a relationship, they're the ones in the self-help aisle in the bookstore.
Right. Like
you improve yourself, and you keep improving yourself, and then you read the Four Agreements, and then you read this thing, and then you go over there, and you read the Enneagram Code, and every time you do, the narcissist reacts by either turning it down, turning it up, freezing, not reacting at all, so then you go get another book, and it's... Yeah, people go, leave no stone unturned. And I'm like, there's no more stones. Like, they're dust in my hands. They're gone.
You know who's obsessed with the Four Agreements? Steven Adler from Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's obsessed with it.
Yeah.
He did a whole podcast with us about it.
He thinks that's how he stayed sober.
Oh, really? Yeah,
but he feels that that's been instrumental for him, yes.
It's Steven. You got to consider.
I don't have to consider anything. I got one definition of one thing, and I'm sticking with it. I had his mom and him on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
I kicked Steven out.
Oh, really?
That woman had a hole in her, and I wanted to, go investigate that.
Wow.
She was beautiful.
Yeah.
So to Cheryl, 22. Cheryl. No, Cheryl, 22 months sober.
She's
we
already had
Cheryl.
Right?
Cheryl's
still there? Yeah,
member
of
still
the, on hold. Was there, hang on a second.
Member of the nation.
Let me get her back. Maybe she wants... Oh, right. Now she's down below. Let's see.
It's like Otto and George. Every time Otto talks, the show sucks,
This is very special.
Everyone knows every time you talk, the show sucks.
Travis. Travis, what's up?
Yes.
Hey, man.
Travis.
Here, Dr. Drew. Holy crap. I can't believe this is happening.
Here we are.
Hey, you guys live, by the way.
You live, too.
Huge fan here.
Is that your like merch? Is that like on your
it's
merch?
Our aloha.
Is that your merch?
I'm going through... my first breakup, first love. I'm 31, so I know it's a little late for that. But I was in the closet when I met this guy. When I was 26, we dated for just over 4 years. So it's been about a month since the breakup. I am also withdrawing from pot at the moment. I was a very heavy user.
Wow, what made you do that? You had a double whammy of depression.
Yeah.
Loss and depression.
Loss and pot withdrawal.
Yeah. Depression, pot
withdrawal. I know, right? I don't know. I try
You're a masochist.
To do too much at,
What's
at once.
Name? Travis.
What's your question, Travis?
Maybe.
He wants to know, what's your question? Jay asked. What is it that, are you looking for hope? Are you looking for medical ideas? What are you looking for?
I guess kind of all of the above.
Well, I am not a doctor, so I'll give you the medical advice. Wellbutrin. you can't just detox off pot by yourself. People do it all the time. Drew.
I didn't know you had to detox off of pot. I just stopped smoking pot.
There can be a rough couple months. Very rough sometimes.
Especially if you're doing it while you're
hearing you talk about smoking pot and how it's not good for your brain and cause panic attacks and things like that.
Yeah.
My brain, I've got a lot of trauma in my past, you know, in my childhood, mental, physical, sexual, that type of thing. I really turned to pot in the beginning of the relationship for some reason. I think over 4 years it changed my brain chemistry.
Sure.
And I'm prone to depression and anxiety already given, you know, my trauma history and all that.
Mm-hmm. So are you on any meds now?
So,
are you on any meds
am
now?
Am I on any meds?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm on lorazepam right now.
Lorazepam?
I don't know. That's for anxiety, right?
Well, that's what he has.
Yeah, but it's short.
He has depression, too.
Yeah, that's for anxiety.
And he said he's panicked.
Because of listening to the podcast, you know, Loveline, religiously, for years, I'm well aware of the dangers of benzodiazepines.
Okay,
I'm well aware of
the
addiction factor there. Addiction runs in my family.
This guy's weird.
You know, I've got two brothers who are heroin addicts, a father who is an alcoholic. So I'm well aware of the dangers of the benzodiazepine. So I'm really trying to not take as many as I'm allotted every day.
Okay.
And be careful about that.
I mean, you should use them.
That would put you in constant withdrawal.
Yeah, don't use them for more than a week or two, period. They are very dangerous for you.
Oh, see, now.
Yeah, she gave me a month's supply. I've never been on them before.
What's your address? Hold on.
You need to see somebody who really understands what you're going through. That was not a psychiatrist at that, was it?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, you need to see a psychiatrist.
No, that was a primary care doctor.
Yeah,
dentist.
You need to see a psychiatrist.
Give you benzos you
get,
for
the first order of business, my friend, is get to a psychiatrist, somebody who's treated cannabis addiction,
okay,
who can deal with the depression and withdrawal and anxiety, all of it together. And maybe get – and then that person can refer you to a therapist. You can get some trauma therapies going. I mean, you need to get a whole sort of little plan going.
And you got to make a list of what you just told us, because you feel relaxed and you feel attached to Dr. Drew. So it's really easy to say all these things, but it may not be with a very cold first-time visit to a psychiatrist. And they tend to, you know, 20, 30 minutes fax and get you out of there.
Yeah, yeah.
You should list all those things on a little piece of paper. I always tell clients.
That's a good idea.
And when you're with the psychiatrist, list off. You were sexually abused. You have a family history of addiction and two brothers who are heroin addicts. You say that, the psychiatrist is going to stop in their tracks pause.
Yeah, and then say, this is how much pot I smoke. This is when I stopped. Here's how much lorazepam I'm using. And then, boom.
Travis, can I – it's Jay Moore. Can I tell you something, buddy?
No, you can't, Jay. You're, stop it.
You're like the most withered guy.
No, I didn't call to talk to you, Jay.
None for you, Mr. Moore.
He called for free medical advice.
You're killing everyone around you, Leon. You want to talk to him? You talk to him. He's crazy. You're like the most withered guy that I've ever heard call a show.
Yeah,
and I think just you being honest with you and going to see a psychiatrist ASAP like yesterday.
Yeah.
You're going to be okay, man.
Yeah.
Like, you're not like your family.
Yeah.
You're not like those around you. You're smarter than your peers. You've been through hell and back, and you're just like, I'm just getting this energy from you. Like, you're just completely with it.
He just needs a little help. I agree. He needs some help right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I have a therapist, and she says the same exact thing.
Oh, there you go. Like,
so why don't you start listening to some of us? If everybody says the same thing. Maybe listen.
Let's call Trump and see what he says.
But yes, that's not.
Yeah, I don't feel very with it right now. But hearing you say that definitely makes me.
You know what you're doing
better.
Is the trauma coming out of the closet and the repercussions of what you perceived were going to be repercussions. You find the love of your life. That person that you broke up, the breakup, is forever tied to. You know, trauma doesn't have to be down. Trauma can be up. Like you liberating yourself, finding who you are, coming out of the closet, saying, my name's Travis, I'm a homosexual, and I'm a loving, yeah. beautiful, kind, compassionate human being. That's also trauma because you had to come out of the closet. So this person is now tied, fairly so, to that because you came out of the closet to have love with this person, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I was
so you're stalling.
Very
this is all extra words.
Religious,
great,
Baptist,
terrific.
Christian.
Doesn't interest
I tried
me.
To pray the gay
don't
for,
care. Doesn't interest me at all.
The better part of
doesn't matter.
Years.
You're still it going. It doesn't matter.
Huge.
You're stalling. The reason
no,
your therapist hold on. Your therapist tells you you're with it. We tell you you're with it. I picked up on the fact that you're with it. Everyone around you tells you you're with it, and you don't see a psychiatrist. You're just stalling because you kind of like the space that you're in.
No,
why
no,
do
no.
we
well,
do it? Because we love it.
No, no. Trauma survivors
here,
do that.
Yeah, no. Here's the thing. I have seen
you said,
a psychiatrist
you did that in my
before
podcast.
Coming
you said,
out of
no,
the closet.
No, then you agree with me.
That was when I first started to deal with mental health and all that. I was raised to believe that. Not seeing that seeing a secular therapist and those types
doesn't
of things.
Doesn't matter.
That
it doesn't matter. Everything
you
you're saying doesn't matter.
Put that
it
all
doesn't
aside.
Matter.
Put it
he
aside.
No, but okay. he has put it aside.
Yeah.
He has
he's
put that
moved
aside.
On.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
it's all just words to keep him from going to a psychiatrist.
Yeah. And,
you're
and,
too with it. Just get your act. Just go.
When you said that's what we do, I assumed you meant everybody, but I'm saying let's keep that in the trauma survivor category. Trauma survivors compartmentalize and feel very mortified of ever addressing the trauma. It's over. It's done. I'm done. I've dealt with it. I've dealt with it.
Nobody's asking him to address trauma. We're seeing, telling him to go see a psychiatrist.
He'll have to. He'll need to do that. Bob
but,
and
I mean,
did
it'll
make
be
that
an evolution. It'll be
but
an evolution.
He's very well aware of the fact that he's going to get very well once he goes to see a psychiatrist.
But their brain doesn't know that the unconscious part is going, no, no, you're fine. You're fine. Don't deal with this. Ah, leave that behind. Because they fear they're going to
I like how you assume I'm not a trauma survivor, by the way.
No. I did not assume that because when you said we, I thought maybe it included him, but it doesn't include everybody. And the fact is it's about rewiring to that part of the brain, not revivifying the experience. We have to sort of reassure them.
I know what revivifying.
Reliving it in any way.
Why didn't you say reliving?
Are you a trauma survivor?
Because sometimes some people fear it's going to they're not only going to relive it, but it's going to be even more vivid than they
Well, let's
know.
Let's stop talking so. In the abstract and talk in the concrete. So
Hold
I
on.
Went
Travis,
through trauma
just,
therapy, okay, right? And I don't know if Travis wants to or has, but the first time I admitted what you hear tens of thousands of times of victims is they feel guilty, like they brought it on themselves, like they made it happen. When I first heard myself say that, it was the most powerful thing about overcoming or coming to grips with it.
Because you were so surprised.
Because it came out of my mouth. I never even thought that. I was just talking to this therapist. It was about 6 months in. And I said, you know, probably the most thing I feel weirdest about is I kind of liked it.
Oh, yeah. That,
yeah, it feels good. Yeah. That's why my head,
just
my shame.
Just saying that out of your mouth is gives you great ability
well, so you
to
attach,
start figuring things
you
out.
You attach guilt to that. You said,
I'm Catholic.
No, that's the shame. No, I mean, that's... But that's, I think, what separates Travis from the aggregate is I don't think Travis doesn't want to go, and I would like you to comment on this, Travis. I don't think Travis is stalling going to a psychiatrist because he's fearful of going through all this, reliving all this trauma. Are you, Travis?
No, not at all. I have done some work.
I was more right than Drew.
To deal with the trauma.
You were more. Jay
I should,
was
I
more
should
right.
Be, I need to be in therapy for years. I'm aware of that.
And you
don't
go.
I don't blame myself for it anymore. You know, I.
Why don't you go to therapy?
No,
Travis?
Not.
Why do you not go? Because you. Cause Jay's argument.
Why don't you go to your psychiatrist?
Currently, it's just I've seen a therapist for.
Why don't you go to a psychiatrest? Why haven't you been?
And then stopped going because I started smoking more pot.
Okay. Why don't you see a psychiatrist, Travis?
Because pot is better.
You know
what? No, therapist is different. Why don't you see a psychiatrist, Travis?
It's that dopamine rush.
Travis,
that my brain is used to.
When did the bridge burn down? Travis, why don't you see a psychiatrist? No, it was a different call.
It was a different call.
Travis, why don't you see a psychiatrist? Straight. Just hold on. Before you answer,
okay.
I want you to remove any words that are extra, that are not the answer to, the truthful answer as to why you have not seen a psychiatrist yet. And don't bring up anything from this moment backwards. Why don't you see a psychiatrist?
Just call tomorrow.
Okay. So I'm back home in New Hampshire. I moved 3 hours away.
Don't care.
For the relationship. My insurance, my health insurance is still in New York. My doctor's in New York. My
There's so much on the table, I don't even know which one to address. Why don't you see? Why don't you personally see a psychiatrist, Trav? Like, I'm the guy. I'm the snowplow. All I got to get to is the street here.
Yeah.
Why don't you see a psychiatrist?
Yeah. Money?
I'm deciding whether or not I'm staying in New York or whether I'm staying at home. If I stay at home, then I'm going to get established here.
Where do you
get
live right insurance, now?
See a psychiatrist. I'm not against seeing a psychiatrist.
Are you staying with family?
Where do you live right now, Travis?
If I get one in New York Hampshire. Right now.
You live in New Hampshire? Do you get mail in... Does your mail go to...
No, it goes to New York. I'm back home in New Hampshire. I eventually moved to 3 hours away for the relationship in New York. So basically, I'm established in New York right now. I'm just back home in New Hampshire right now because this is where my friends and family are and my support system. I'm on short-term disability from work.
So you got time.
I'm not opposed
to
getting a psychiatrist, but if I were to get a psychiatrist...
You'd get well. No. If you were to get a psychiatrist, you'd get well. Dot.
You could get...
You got so much barbed wire all over this field, and none of it's real.
Yeah.
New York, New Hampshire, fucking Ohio. Who gives a shit? Just go to a psychiatrist. Well, this is my support. If that's your support system, then go see one.
You just turned into Christopher Walken with the barbed wire.
There's barbed wire all over the field. Go see somebody. But I'm from New York. I'm in New Hampshire short stay. Support crew. The lion has to show the jackals who he is. Just, you know, I wish I was
on top of it with these people. Why not?
I just know when there's extra shit, and I wish I was working with this guy one-on-one.
Extra shit.
Will you email me at morestories37? I don't know why that's funny. morestories3737 at Gmail.
Travis, go ahead and do that. I put him on hold.
More stories, morestories3737@gmail.com. Please email me.
But I do like the way Jay goes at the just answer the question. Like he still did not answer the question.
The guy didn't tell me when the bridge burnt down.
Right.
You know why? Because I was doing a fucking ripped Taylor joke when Imanor McDonald were in the hallways of Saturday Night Live. Rip Taylor. Who's the guy with the confession?
Rip Taylor.
Looks like Jerry Jones. Yeah. Rip Taylor comes out and goes, him and Norm, like, talk about like Nixon and Elvis shaking hands photographs, like those two. He goes, no, we're from the same town, you know? Yeah, that's where the old theater, you know, that theater burned down last week. And Rip Taylor goes, that was supposed to be next week. The whole fucking bridge thing was so I could get that fucking joke out. And this prick's going, no, it's like I-85. And the guy burnt it down. I got a pizza in the oven. Speaking of fire, a little warm this weekend. You guys notice? When did the bridge burn down? Now, you know, these aquapods, I don't know why we got to call them aquapods. Just 8 ounces of water, right, guys? When did the bridge burn down?
Holy moly.
Man. How much time we got here?
I talked to that lady.
Okay, we'll talk to that lady.
Which
lady?
Beth. I'm going to get Beth. Beth, what's going on there?
Beth?
Hey, how's everyone doing?
We're good.
Great. What's happening, Beth?
Awesome. So I have two questions. The first one is that my father-in-law ultimately passed away from addiction, and my husband has the addiction gene. And I guess what's the probability that our son
50-50.
50%.
50-50.
50% generally. What's your husband's ethnicity?
He's Caucasian.
Yeah, he's all right.
Okay,
it's 50. Yeah, it's 50-50.
Nice.
And usually by the time they're four, you know which part of the 50-50
it is. Yeah,
a lot of drums.
Yeah. Well, like my son is 98% my husband.
Okay, then.
Well, biologically, that's kind of impossible. However.
No, but she's talking about personality. Oh, she's talking about personality.
Don't let that get in the way of humor, Bob. Jesus Christ.
No, this is my thing. I believe that we can start to identify our children much earlier as most likely to have.
And then my son Travis is gay.
And then start parenting them.
I remember that. I remember that
name. And start parenting them.
He'll be emailing you soon.
Then start parenting them. Are you following me?
Yeah, accordingly. No, I agree. But it's only the addicts that can really identify the addiction potential.
Oh, you can see it.
Well, you know what that all is? The number one cause of death on earth, and that's worry. You can worry about your son being an addict, or you can be proactive and educate him and tell him you may not try this because it's what, you know.
Yeah, I think that's the key, is to help him understand he has a gene, and he's seen the gene of the family. It kills people, and it gets going when you use substances. And if he has trauma in his life, get that trauma treated, because the trauma is what really increases the risk that he'll go to something to regulate.
And what, Drew?
Yeah.
And
firm boundaries.
Firm boundaries, yeah, sure. Firm boundaries.
Absent thing in parenting these days.
What's your other question, Beth?
All right, so my other question is that, like I said, my husband has the addiction gene, and he's extremely smart. He has a PhD. He's an engineer. But he currently smokes pot and drinks very regularly. And I guess my question is that he's completely functioning normal. Like, he's not, you know, going to the extreme addiction, but how safe is this to maintain, and should he really be 100% clean because he clearly has the addiction gene?
Don't say anything, Drew. Why don't you answer that? This is Jay. Just right now, answer that for me. You.
Beth.
You answer that exact question for me. You answer that for me as if I just asked
you. If he should be clean?
Whatever you just asked, I want you to answer the question right now. Don't even think. Just answer the question for me.
I mean, like, I feel like the answer obviously is yes. Like, he should be clean, but that's so much easier said than done.
Right.
Both true.
For who? Now, can I add something, Jay?
I just want to say, first of all, I just want to say, atta girl.
Yeah.
Make it easier for who? See, because it's hard to confront a semi-functioning addict.
I don't think he's very functioning, to be honest.
Yeah.
Okay.
He has consequences, but you've got to be really motivated to change. We talked about disgust in the last show, and people have to reach some point that they're willing to change. And that feeling, that point is usually, I'm going to die, I'm going to lose my freedom, or I'm totally disgusted with myself. And those things motivate change. Yeah. But until he gets there, it's not going to change.
Let's do Jay's.
Lot of self-help books.
Let's do your Empire State Building with it. So you guys, he was drunk and made a scene in the lobby, and you guys are on the second floor, and he's just only going to smoke pot, right? And he's sorry for what happened in the lobby. Is that what's going on, Beth?
It's pretty abstract.
No, see, that's the whole point, is that
that's how it works.
Like, he never becomes aggressive or makes a scene, nothing. He's completely a functioning 100%. Like,
so he's emotionally unavailable, like I said, and he doesn't nurture, nor he's not fully present in his parenting or marriage.
Hey, Beth.
In our marriage, no. He's always had, like, emotional regulation problems.
Hey, Beth.
So,
You wouldn't have called if this wasn't a problem, sweetheart.
Oh, that's a good point.
Nobody calls because, you know, hey, who knows? You called because it's a problem, and this is the intermediate step between actually taking the step. Yeah. Let's just call a spade here. Right?
Okay. Yeah, no, that is true. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is like the safe step. You get to call. You get to talk to like a celebrity like Drew and Bob, and then, I don't know, I had a Boston accent, Drew and Bob, by the grace of God, and then you get to call back, get a little advice.
You became the mailman from Cheers all of a sudden. Yeah.
And, I appreciate that, Nami. And then you get to tell your friends, like, this is what Drew and Bob said, and, you know, it's this existence, it's like a satellite, and you got to be the planet here, you know, and you're a moon right now.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't have called if this wasn't a problem. And it's a scary place.
So let's give her a solution. Here's what I would do. Nudge him to go to get assessed at an outpatient program. Just keep, however your relationship is, just go to meet some counselor somewhere. Because there's a entryway into... Okay.
Okay, good.
Do you go with him sometimes? Because a lot of therapists of addicts will have their spouses come in for one session.
He won't allow it.
Right, to figure out what the truth is.
He won't allow it because he can change the narrative when he comes home. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
They mentioned it. I haven't gone yet. I'm more hesitant to go, but they have mentioned us coming in together.
There you go.
You should do it.
You won't go, Beth, because the truth is there, and it's scary. You're in a very scary place because the next step, it's a doorway you're at right now. And
Maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe accepting reality as it is. And,
well, that's the doorway. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, if I go to therapy, I'm going to see firsthand, like, what's actually going on around. And I don't know. But, Beth, you know, another way to do it, I had this – once where a therapist told me, just look at the person and go, I need you to stop drinking. And that's all you say. No matter what the person says back, I need you to stop drinking.
Well, I don't, you got some balls coming at me. And when they're done talking, you go, I need you to stop drinking. And that's all I said for like 48 hours. And then they went to like Antigua.
Crossroads.
It was nice and expensive.
Oh, my God. It's hard to get there, too. You got to have a passport. How many alcoholics have a passport?
Well, mine.
Thanks, Beth. All right, guys.
Go to the therapy session.
We
got to
wrap things
good.
Up. Got to wrap it up. Jmore37 is the Twitter handle. We've got More
Did
Stories
you really
Podcast.
Go to Crossroads?
New America's
no,
Lakers
me,
Podcast.
Hold on, you're talking about my plugs, Forrest.
Jeez, Forrest.
New America's Lakers Podcast, hashtag A Lakers Pod, right?
I didn't know that. I go ask ALP. If you guys got Lakers questions, you can hit me up. More sports, whatever. You know what? Just tweet me. I'll hit you back.
You gave out your email address.
No, that's the website one. I didn't give out my personal one.
Check out
Cuckold Fantasy. Todd.
Also, check out the Elizabeth Smart
let's separate from my sentence from yours a little bit here.
All right.
Like, mine's like a goofy sentence, and yours is like an incredible piece of work.
All right. Well,
I'm making porn jokes, and you're like, also.
Yeah, aneTV.com is where you can follow the details about the Elizabeth Smart special. Monday, November 20th at 10 p.m. is when we're doing the questions answered.
Tonight. If you're listening to the podcast.
If you're listening to the
tonight.
Podcast.
Tonight. Get your questions answered. And I can't differentiate Elizabeth Smart from the other girl from Berkeley. There was another one. What was that one's name?
Patty Hearst. All right.
No, there was the heaviest one I ever heard of was the one that was held captive. They caught her in a mall.
Yeah, she's at the food court. She was so heavy.
It was like a year and a half.
Yeah. And she had children with the guy, remember?
This is a big ending you guys end on.
We're trying to build up his A&E show, Jay.
About a kidnapped girl in a food court in the mall that's heavy.
Those of you listening to the podcast, we thank you all for joining us. Jay, thank you as always, man. It's good to see you. It really is.
I would see you every week. Just I love being around you.
Let's do it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm into it.
Producer's bringing you back. Bob, good to see you, man.
This is Bob.
Then who's this guy?
This is Nate the Man.
I thought that was Bob.
That's Nate the Man.
Sorry about that.
I should have known the guy with the Halloween socks 2 weeks after. When did
the bridge burn down?
May 5th, 1992. It's supposed to be May 7th.
Why wouldn't they just build the bridge?
All right, we'll see you next time.
All right.
All right, it is fall and your immune system is about to get tested, everybody. Not only does the changing weather mark the start of cold and flu season, it's also back to school time when kids become walking petri dishes. While catching something may be inevitable, there is no excuse for letting yourself get dehydrated in the process. So when you're wiped out with cold or flu, the first piece of advice always to drink plenty of fluids, but we seem to forget that. Now, once you've started feeling dehydrated, it's already too late for water or sports drinks. Rapid rehydration requires the proper balance of sodium, glucose, and water, and nothing gives this like Hydralyte. Hydralyte's formulation is based on established, proven science, and it is the simply best rehydration product I've found in this country. Hydralyte comes in great flavors, orange, berry, lemonade, and it's available in a pre-mixed drink, a powder, or what I prefer, those effervescence tablets. You just drop in a glass of water or a bottle of water, off you go. It's like your own portable IV, but you can do it enterally. Compared to sports drinks, Hydralyte delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. Hydralyte solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-use, easy-to-follow instructions. You can find Hydralyte at Rite Aid or online at Amazon.com. And for a limited time, our listeners can save 30% on Hydralyte. Just click the banner on our site, drdrew.com, 30% off. Great deal. Do it. We have a new sponsor, and we're kind of excited about these guys. They are Last House Sober Living. And, Bob, what do we always say about the treatment centers?
If you're doing your job right, they don't like you.
They don't like it. It should not be satisfying. It should not be gratifying. And that's what we love about Last House Sober Living in Los Angeles. It's a structured program. It's based on accountability, on action. All the places that we always complain about are gratifying, right? That they give you too much nice, which is okay if you're also holding accountable. But it doesn't usually work like that. They, of course, want to combat learned helplessness, device dependency, meaning they don't let them have their phones all the time, which is, again, yes. Codependent family systems, check. The community challenges the addict with disciplinary systems that teaches that there are consequences to their actions. The program isn't easy. It's difficult. Bobby, it just reminds me of what we used to do. I just remember we used to just kick people out or ask them to leave. They didn't want to be a part of it. Fine. That's fine.
Our overhead was low.
Yeah. So if you love are looking for a program that aligns with many of the characteristics that we think lead to successful recovery, take a look at Last House. To learn more, visit thelasthouse.net. That is T-H-E, thelasthouse.net. net. Check him out today. We have somebody from that program. His name is Chris Kirby. Came through the program. And tell us a little bit about your recovery and what happened. And if you want, if you're comfortable doing that, what you're doing now.
Absolutely, Dr. Drew. I'm really, really excited to be here. Like you guys said, we're dealing with a disease that is, characterized by ego, entitlement, and selfishness. And a lot of the programs nowadays are really kind of coddle addicts.
Massaging with, that.
Yeah. Five-star resort style accommodations. And, I'm just tired of seeing people die.
Well, okay, in that brief couple sentences, you just articulated things that Bob and I talk about all the time.
Right.
One is don't die. We're interested in people not dying. That we've gotten sick of that. And two, this idea, I don't know how to articulate this without sounding like like you said, you keep a smile on my face while we say it. But there's all this coddling. Oh, the poor hermit. No. When they're in their disease, what'd you call it? You said ego.
Selfishness.
You listed a great list. Ego, selfishness.
Entitlement.
Entitlement, grandiosity. All that is that's what they're manifesting in the disease. And that's what needs to be hit. It needs to be confronted.
Well, I'm going to say it. We're dealing with millennials these days. As if it wasn't bad enough to be a drug addict, we're dealing with millennial drug addicts.
Yeah.
And that's where we see the learned helplessness, where they sit around want mom to do it. They complain about how they can't do it until somebody does it for them. So it's
Bob, does that sound familiar?
Well, that's what I deal with every day.
Yeah.
And it's a fine line. One thing, do you guys take insurance or you don't?
We don't take
because
insurance.
Because the insurance dictates that kind of nonsense of,
gratifying.
How are you feeling today?
Yeah.
How are you feeling? Oh, all that therapeutic nonsense. Whereas before, when we were doing it, the insurance company didn't really dictate care. They just dictated days
duration
of care, right?
Yeah.
And now they micromanage.
Oh, boy.
It's sober living to not allow kids to have their phones in a sober living. You are a rebel in an industry of scum, sir.
You're being abusive. How dare you?
No, we should definitely let them Tinder and be on Facebook.
Maybe order up some drugs online while they're at it.
I've seen
Craigslist.
I've seen it, too. Yeah, Craigslist, whatever. But I'm glad to hear.
So how do you get – I'm really interested. How do you get people to sign up for it?
And stay.
Well, the family piece. That's the huge piece that's being missed.
But they're sick motherfuckers, too.
Yeah. So tell me about it. Well, I'm the director of admission, so it's
I cussed. I'm sorry, Susan. You have no idea what millennial parents are like.
No, we're looking at them. You're looking at a couple of them.
This is your world.
I'm just glad I'm allowed to cuss.
So here's the thing. A couple incidences have happened in the last 6 months in my life around this kind of bad parenting, where a principal of my kid's school didn't respond as the parents felt she should have, and they tried to run her out of town on a rail and get her, out of the
Lose
principalship.
Their job. Yeah.
So they do that in treatment all the time now. It's a treatment center's fault. You're being mean to my son. You're picking on him. You ever get that?
Oh, yeah, all the time. And so most of our program is controlling the families. We have a consequence structure that allows the house to pretty much run itself. And the executive leadership's job is to basically manage the families. And, they continue to try and control their loved one, right, when all the evidence over the years shows them that they can't do that in this idea of control, and I can control his disease and I can make him happy. I mean, I get it. It's a mother's natural instinct to want to make their son happy, to want him to be safe.
Yeah, fearful if she doesn't do something, he or she won't be safe.
Right, and then the son plays on that in order to stay sick and in order to keep getting drugs.
I don't even think about it as the individual playing it. I just think it as a feature of the illness. It's just it's interpersonal disease. It plays on everything it's got. Anything you can get, it will bring in.
And there's these new mutations of it, which are the parents, the best friend parents, I call them.
Oh, boy.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're the advocates. They're their child's advocate. They have been their whole life. The soccer coach wasn't fair to their kid. The school wasn't doing right by their kid. Mm-hmm. And this just extends out. When you look at the history of the parents of the addicts I deal with, this has been going on throughout the kid's life.
Oh, sure.
Right?
What happened to the parents? What was their I wonder. We got to look at that.
I think they were neglected. I mean, I am that parent.
Yeah.
You were neglected. You didn't know. You didn't feel nurtured or loved. There was a wholeness that was missing. So then there's an overcompensation.
My mom always told me she wanted to be the mother that she never had.
Right. That's what people do.
There you go.
And so that mom who complains to the soccer coach that her son's not getting enough playing time is the same mom that complains to me that her son doesn't have a job yet and we're not finding him a job quick enough. When it's like, he's supposed to find his own job. Like, give him enough room to grow to his potential. Stop suffocating your child.
I you'll love this. We had a client on Celebrity Rehab, and I dealt with the family and the kid for years afterwards, right? And at one point, the mom was mad at the son and said, he needs to get a job at Starbucks. And I said, have you met your son? He couldn't work at Starbucks.
Yeah.
He can barely, like, you know, walk and chew gum at the same time. He couldn't be a barista. But to her, right, that was, you know, that was beneath his station in life.
Right.
And he couldn't have functioned there. I think you know who I'm talking about.
I do. Yeah,
does the term entitlement ring a bell here with that?
Uh-huh. Yeah, entitlement. I was just thinking of all the adjectives you could put in your little list there. That's why I was having you list them. Is entitlement, grandiosity, ego, selfishness, self-preoccupation.
Are we talking about the government or are we talking about kids?
Well, no, calm down. Calm down. Hey, if anybody has a question, they can call in now at 323-649-8268.
I got a question. Where are you guys at? Where are you located?
We're in West Los Angeles. We're in Mar Vista and Playa Vista.
Oh, right near Promises.
Actually right near Promises.
I heard Promises going out of business.
No kidding.
Yeah, they closed the outpatient building on Barrington.
So the outpatient program is done?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to just be a primary residential treatment.
And how long do you want people to stay? Or do you make a commitment?
So are you working with Patricia at Promises and get
absolutely
their clients?
Yeah, Patricia.
I knew there was a connection there because Patricia's old school.
Old school, 12 staff.
She and I were in Cry Help together.
I remember Patricia. All right. I remember her. I knew her back in the day too. So how long do you want people to stay, or do they have to sign up for a certain period of time?
Well, we say a 90-day commitment because anything longer than that scares people. But the truth is we graduate our residents with a year sober.
Great.
They've worked all 12 steps. That's they great. Move into an apartment with another graduate. They're paying for it. They're not calling mom
How many
and
beds?
Dad. We have 44 beds
oh
throughout our three houses.
Oof.
Yeah.
So you did you pick up their sober living that's right on the Street of Promises?
No,
that big,
no.
huge, you remember that?
Yeah,
that
yeah. Things just
there
grand,
was a sober living, Drew. When you walked in, it looked like a regular residential house, and it just kept going for like a city block. And
wow.
It had how many beds in there? Like 24
it
beds.
It had like 15 parking spaces, and in L.A., that's like gold.
And they gave it up. Promises gave it up. So everybody's going primary residential. So sober living is going to go back to being sober living.
Primary residential, and then you follow sober living will follow the primary.
There won't be any of that Florida model. Yeah, nobody can afford to do that Florida model anymore.
Residential will be what we did in Celebrity Rehab. It'll be exactly that.
Yeah, but they didn't pay.
But residential will be what we used to do in the hospital.
Yes.
And now they do it in a residential setting, which
yes.
we showed clearly
it's
you can
fine.
Do
you
no
can
problem.
Do it easily.
Yeah, it's no problem.
But what had happened was all the treatment programs opened up Florida models and have had them for like the last 7-8 years.
Which is full spectrum.
It's all the PHP, IOP,
yeah.
OP,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
The insurance industry countered about 8 months ago, and they're just not going to pay the compensation they were for outpatient. So that makes it the services that all these places were providing, they can't do. You're losing money. You can't provide housing and food and transportation and all this coddling.
Well,
so now it gives the opportunity for real sober living to come back.
Yeah.
And say, you don't want to be here, then leave. Here's a trash bag.
Like real real boundaries, not just signing a contract that says my behavior is going to improve. We want, and a lot of it is a lot of people say the same thing I say, you know, structure, peer accountability.
A lot of programs, yeah.
Yeah, anybody can have a beautiful website and a director of admissions that can talk the talk. But it's like what I talk about with parents is what does that look like in practice?
Yeah.
Right. And so, for example, our residents that are working and are contributing towards rent at the house are required to go to at least 6 meetings a week. So what happens if they miss a meeting? Right. So at the last house, their big brother or another resident at the house actually writes that down on a board back at the house. And then they would get assigned a short essay, something on, integrity, punctuality, something thought-provoking. And it's designed to be a real consequence because so many of these young men have had their consequences mitigated.
Is it all-male program or is it?
All-male.
All-male program.
Men only.
We didn't specify that. Okay,
yes.
Good. You're going to open a female program eventually? Or
you know, I get asked to do that all the time, and I just – we've looked into it, and the question is will the same structure work for women? And there's a lot of other underlying issues with women regarding, you know you know, personality disorders and things that might not work. But, you know, there are a couple other good women's programs out there
sure.
that we still
oh,
work
yes.
with.
So. Absolutely.
I'm excited about it. This is – you were ahead of the curve. This has been coming a long time where it's just sober living, right?
Yeah.
So basically –
I was just thinking about how hard it is, though, to get people – get these dudes off the couch and into the meetings.
But what's polluted the water of sober living is they have to be sitting in the outpatient group so the company can
yeah.
bill their insurance.
Right.
And they can't get jobs. They can't go to school because they always have to be in outpatient.
Right, right, right.
Right? This is yeah. just the – you know, I went to my first sober living in 1988, and it was like four twin beds to a room out in North Hollywood. I wasn't really a North Hollywood guy at the time. And that's where you went. You didn't know any better. That's what sober living was. If they would have had a nice house in the Hollywood Hills with free food and girls, I would have gone there.
Sure, yeah.
And so
would.
Now.
And you would have complained about the same things at the place in Hollywood yeah. as the place in North Hollywood.
Because they both had a curfew or something. Well,
they both
right?
wanted you to be sober.
Yeah, that's, well, that's another problem.
The worst
right?
problem.
How do you deal with that? Because there's a lot of people going to treatment that don't want to be sober.
Well, you know, for me, when I got to the house, the cool thing was I had friends. Like, I made friends pretty immediately. And it's because of that structure that we had where we're building. We're teaching guys how to be assertive with the writing of strikes and the peer accountability. And so it broke me off from these old ideas I had about what brotherhood meant, about what loyalty meant, about what honesty meant, because that was snitching, right? You were snitching on me.
Yeah.
But when it became cool to, you know, do a four-step, when it became cool to meditate, when the other guys were like, dude, we don't want to hear about your war story. Like, what'd you think of the speaker at Marina Center? And they taught me how to, you know, what was cool wasn't the way I was living, but to like get a job. It wasn't cool to hound my mom for money for cigarettes. It something changed within me, and like a true brotherhood formed.
How long did you stay there?
A year.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm still friends with a lot of the guys that, you know, I met in my first 90 days there, and this is 5 years later.
There you go. So it just reminds me of the 1980s. That's what it was. Real treatment's coming back.
Real treatment that yeah. you can funnel people into without getting diverted into other stuff. Yeah.
yeah.
Well, Chris, appreciate it very much. Chris Kirby, again.
I'm assuming you don't allow Suboxone.
No, we're absolutely.
We didn't even ask that, yeah. It's abstinence.
Yeah, abstinence-based program. We teach people how to live life on life's terms.
What do you recommend?
How dare you?
Just personally, what do you recommend when you meet somebody at the Marina Center that's on Suboxone considering themselves sober? How do you deal with that? How do you address it?
Oh, gosh, Bob, that's a big question, and I don't want to get vilified by my industry if I get too big of an answer, but as somebody who was in some of the first Suboxone groups at age 22.
You were?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Age 22.
Go
ahead, tell us.
Everybody was on Suboxone, and the group kept getting bigger. It never got smaller, and this was and people would just
no one ever graduated.
Of course yeah, not.
Exactly, and it's all 21, 22, 23-year-old, you know, young men and women where it's like there is a better way.
Right. It's just people can choose the path they choose, not where you are. Your program is abstinence-based, period.
Yeah.
And you would prefer, and we, the three of us, would prefer to see people have a full and complete recovery. We would love return to a flourishing life on life's terms, right?
Right. And when you look at what's worked for 82 years with Alcoholics Anonymous,
right.
It's like it's been showing us that the easier, softer way isn't the best way to
recover. I have decided, by the way, one of the big solutions to our opiate problem is to unravel the attack on 12-step. I'm sick and tired of that. I'm sick and tired of it. It's free, everybody. You're wondering about health care? It's free. It is free, and it has worked for 82 years. Why wouldn't you give that a try? For
well,
God's sake.
Christy, when we were with him, seemed like he's reinventing it. right?
Who? Christy?
Christy.
I think he's
have you heard about
he's
this
backdooring
thing?
It. He's, no, sort of, he's sliding
he's
into it.
Basically, he's assigning anybody who ODs in a hospital a sponsor.
Yeah.
It's okay. Crazy.
But he's calling them a coach.
Just change the terminology well, because, to get to the millennials.
Yeah.
Well, and but, also no, give, but all this... All the coaches are sober people
know,
from AA.
I know what they are, of course. And they, their goal is to get everybody into the program. And so that's a good thing. Anyway, we got to wrap up. Jay Moore's here. We're going to go to him. But, Chris, I appreciate you being part of this.
Awesome.
And,
thank you yeah, so much, guys.
The,
thank you,
the website is thelasthouse.net, thelasthouse.net. And let it be your first house.
Yeah.
All right.
Perfect. See ya.
Remember, you can find all these podcasts at drdrew.com. The Dr. Drew podcast, the This Life podcast, and the Adam and Drew podcast, which is available 5 days a week. Find them all on iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Subscribe and get it first. And if you're really happy, click on the Amazon banner at drdrew.com to help support the show. We'll thank you for it. If you join the email list via drdrew.com/contact, we'll send you a weekly infusion newsletter with Dr. Drew's news. We're so grateful when you get in touch. We read all your emails and we'll bring you the subject matter you want to hear about.
You live.